I know that when I was that age, you know, being gay was still a really big deal.
Hello, my name's Kay Anderson, and you are listening to Lost Spaces, the podcast that mourns the death of queer nightlife. Every episode, I talk to a different person about a venue from their past, the memories that they created there, and the people that they used to know. Okay, so I know what I'm about to say is a little simplistic and is a total romanticization, which I'm pretty sure is a word, and if it isn't a word, it is now. But I have a really soft spot for small town gay bars. What I love most is that they are inclusive, even though I acknowledge that that's probably by necessity more than design. And I also love what they happen to represent, like this safe haven nestled into a place that may not feel at all safe otherwise. So this week, if you haven't guessed already from that introduction, we are headed to a small town gay bar. And there's one specific small town gay bar that we're heading to called Rumours, which was in Queensbury in upstate New York. And joining us on this conversation is singer-songwriter, teacher, facilitator, and director of marketing and communications of the Eastern Mountain Retreat Center, Freddie Freeman. We talk all about growing up in a small town and how maybe sometimes that can leave scars, maybe, sometimes, maybe, do you feel me? The cliques that can sometimes form in bare communities, and one of my favorite topics, figuring out just where it is you fit in. I'm still trying to figure it out, so if you have any clues, I would totally be up for listening. Right, let's get into it.
I mean, even though people think of New York City when they think of New York, upstate New York has a lot in common with more rural, kind of conservative places in the country. Like they say, if it weren't for New York City, New York State might be a red state or at least purple.
Oh, okay.
So there's a real interesting mix of liberalism and conservatism around here. You know, if you go into some of the small towns, it can be really a lot like the South in terms of attitudes. But a little bit different because it's a little bit more covert kind of prejudices and homophobia and things like that. It's not as in your face as in the South, but it's sort of sometimes in some of these smaller towns, an undercurrent.
Mm. So help me understand what you mean by covert. Like, can you give any examples?
Like people would be polite in public, but like, especially as a queer person, like you'd be in circles where everybody would assume you're straight, and then you'd hear things like, oh, those faggots, you know.
Okay.
And I grew up and lived in Saratoga Springs, which is not far from Queensbury. It's a real mixture of things in this area. You know, you've got progressive things going on, but you also have that undercurrent of conservatism. It's sort of a mix.
And so what's it like growing up in that environment?
Well, I can tell you what it's like for me growing up in that environment. I mean, different people might have different experiences, but I can tell you growing up in the 80s, going to high school in Saratoga Springs, it was, you know, you didn't want anyone to know you were gay. You'd get teased, you'd call pansy. I can remember my uncles calling me pansy all the time. And here's a really interesting thing. And some of my younger friends are aghast at this when I tell them this, but people my age are like, oh, yeah, that's the way it was. When I was in grade school, it must have been the late 70s, because I remember being in sixth grade. And in gym class, they would play a game called dodgeball, where you would throw the ball at people.
Brutal.
So my gym teachers, kid you not, I'm not kidding, called it Smear the Queer. And it was just accepted. It was just like, now we're going to play Smear the Queer.
Wow.
I mean, and this is the environment we grew up in. And the worst part is we thought it was normal. You know, so I grew up in this era where, you know, gay people were mercilessly ridiculed. And we learned that if you let people know, you're going to be a target. So you kept it hidden. I didn't even come out to myself until I was like 18 or 19.
Ah, okay. Because that was going to be my follow-up question. You mentioned that your uncles referred to you as pansy, which means that potentially you were an effeminate child and people maybe had an inkling about you.
I guess. But also, you would just refer to anyone who was outside of the norm of masculinity as a pansy, a faggot. Like if you weren't good at baseball, oh, you pansy, what's the matter with you? You can't hit the ball, you can't throw like a girl. So I'm sure that children that turned out to be straight got that too, because it was about performing masculinity. And now I know as a 53-year-old man that they were insecure about their masculinity and that's why they had to do that.
Yeah.
But as a child, you don't know, you know, and you just internalize it all. And then you carry that.
Yeah, but it's kind of weird. It's weird though when an adult does that to a child. But that, yeah, let's not get stuck on that. So you recognized it within yourself when you were 18?
Well, I mean, when I was 15, I had little inklings of it because I would look at, you know, pictures of men in white briefs in the Sears catalog. And I noticed that, like, when I was at the YMCA, I would be curious about other men's bodies. And I started having fantasies, you know, about a jock at school. But I always told myself, oh, that's nothing. That's not real. That's just, you know, I'm going to meet a girl. And I let myself believe that for a while. I even dated women for a little while, a couple women. And then the second one, I ended up coming out as bi to her, and then we would look at porn and look at men together, and then I realized I was full-on gay and had to go that direction. And the reason I realized it was because somebody took me to Rumors.
Oh, you're bringing us on topic. How amazing. I don't have to do anything today. Just sit here. So let's talk about that. So who took you to Rumors then?
So I had a friend named Sean who I knew him in high school, and he came out to me as gay because I was in junior high, actually, and I was always losing my folders and my paper and stuff. And I asked Sean right before my history class, can I borrow your notebook? Because I forgot mine. And of course, he had left a letter in there to another guy confessing his love.
Oh.
And I read it, and I was like, I talked to him, and I'm like, I don't care. It's fine. It's all good. And then my family, when I told my family, they were like, ah, oh, you're hanging out with that faggot, you know? And I regret this now, but I kind of withdrew from him a little bit under pressure from, you know, the family pressure. And then he moved away to Texas for a while. And then later on, when I was just out of high school and living in Saratoga, I heard that he was back in town because, oh, I was working at Spencer Gifts. And Sean, my old friend, walked in and purchased a poster for me. And I was like, oh, you're back in town. And one thing led to another. We ended up being roommates. Oh, wait, I'm skipping that. So Sean came into the store and bought the poster, and we reconnected. And him and my girlfriend at the time used to hang out. And he ended up telling me, oh, I go to this bar called Rumors up in Queensbury. And I, at this time, you know, my girlfriend knew that I was bi, and I was like, I want to go check it out. So I went one night with Sean and a guy that he was trying to date named Chris. And so we went to this gay bar. It's my first time in a place like that.
And so how old were you?
21, I think. I think it was like 91. Okay. I know that I was of drinking age, so it must have been later in 91 because I turned 21 in August.
Okay.
So we went to this place, and they had male strippers that night. And I remember because I wrote about this in my journal, and I still have it, right? I wrote about, oh, how I got to tip this guy, and I felt up his body, and it was so much different than a woman. And it was like, oh, my God, it was amazing. And his body was so beautiful and hard and muscular and masculine. And like, I realized that, like, I'm not bi. I'm just pretending to be bi.
Oh, okay. We're jumping a bit far ahead now. Let's go back a step. I do want to hear about this hard man's body, the hard body of the man. Hard. I'm just saying hard a lot. But let's talk about that before you went there, like, what were you thinking? Like, how did it feel to know that you were going to be going to this gay bar, Rumors?
It was a mixture of fear and excitement. A real mixture. The whole time we were going there, I'm like, oh my God, it just felt like we were doing something scandalous. You know, and I know at the time there were people who went to Rumors who would park down the street, you know, because they didn't want their car seen there, right? So it was like this dangerous thing, which also kind of made it kind of cool. So it was really interesting. I couldn't wait to go, but it was like this real, like I said, it was like going to a speakeasy. Like it was kind of subversive in a way.
And so then took me through the feelings just before going in and then going through that front door and how it felt to be in there.
It was kind of like jumping off a diving board.
From how high?
Like pretty high, like one of the higher ones. not like the professional ones, but like...
Enough to shit yourself. Okay.
A little bit, yeah. But it's that rush of excitement, but like fear. Like I said, when you go up the hill on a roller coaster and you're about to go down, and then you open the door and it's like, you just go. You like dive.
And your stomach drops. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it was like, oh my God, I'm here. What is this place? Like, and then you slowly start to acclimate. And I wouldn't say I felt this on the first visit, but after a couple of visits, it's like, oh, this is a refuge for me. And it's no longer fearful. But the first time it was still a little bit like Alice in Wonderland. Like, just kind of like, what is going on? In the best way.
Okay. So I interrupted you. You were telling me that on that first night, it was a stripper night and that you got to touch some man up. So carry on that story.
There was a guy who was wearing kind of a little bit of leather gear and he was dancing and you could tip them and touch them. So I did that and, you know, felt him up. The guy even kissed me, I think.
He really wanted those tips.
Oh, yeah. And I remember just, you know, I wrote about it in my journal how, oh, my God, this was amazing. I think I called him an angel in leather or something like that, which is weird to me now because I don't particularly enjoy going to see strippers and stuff like that. But at the time, it was like a first kind of, wow, male sexual energy that I get to taste, like a little taste. But it was enough that I went, oh, this is me. This is what I want.
So what were the days after that like then in processing that realization? Because, you know, you talked earlier that you'd come out as bisexual and that you had a girlfriend at the time. Mm-hmm. So processing that and realizing that you might need to make some changes to your life, how did that play out?
Yeah, it was a process of like talking to the girl I was dating, who I lived with at the time. And saying, look, I need to pursue relationships with men. Like, I just had to have that talk with her. Also, the relationship just had a lot of problems that had nothing to do with me being gay anyway. So it was a relationship that I wanted to end for various reasons. And it just sort of, there wasn't like any big blow up or breakup. We just sort of gradually, like I got my own apartment. And we actually were friends for years after that. You know, so.
But what about for you? So as someone who was identifying as bisexual, it is a big step to say, actually, that's not who I am. I am this. And to, I'm saying this in a crude way, but like change your label and to transition into something else. Like, how did that feel for you? Was that tricky or more of a relief?
More of a relief because it was more of a move toward authenticity. Whereas the bisexual was an effort to kind of hold on to some sort of heteronormacy. I mean, I think there are many gay men of my age who went through a phase of saying, oh, I'm bisexual, because it was a way to kind of keep a foot in that world. But it was false.
You know? Yeah, but it's also comforting, right? Like, because it gives you, whether like real or not, a feeling of legitimacy in heteronormative settings.
Exactly. Right.
So letting go of that, was that tricky in that respect?
It didn't feel so at the time because it felt like I was just really moving toward more freedom and authenticity. And of course, with that came coming out to the family, which is a whole other thing.
Ooh, is that a kettle of fish we want to get into?
If you want to. I can summarize it for you pretty easily. It was first my mother, when she point blank asked me in the car one day if I liked men. Because, you know, there were signs, just because I had by that time moved out of my own apartment and moved in with my friend Sean,
okay,
who I was not romantically involved with. We were just roommates. But I lived with him, and him and I were going to Rumors and living a gay life. And so my mom asked me about it, and I just straight up just said, yeah, it's true. And she just cried about grandchildren.
Ooh.
And I said, Mom, I have a brother. He's very heterosexual. And my mom is now like a great grandmother. So, you know, I said, you'll be taken care of. Don't worry. Ryan will do that for you. But my mom has been, you know, mostly good about it. But she's of that generation where she still says to me things like, you're so lucky we're so accepting. Like, you, why do you have to flaunt it? We've been so good about this. We accept you. Like, you know, and I'm like, well, you don't get a badge of honor for accepting your kid.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's largely generational. And my mom is only 16 years older than me. She turned 16 the day after I was born. But still, in those 16 years, there was a lot of change. But she's been mostly great about it. My dad, on the other hand, like, they were divorced when I was 10. And my dad was always the kind of man who, I remember when I was a teenager, we were having a talk, and he said to me, Fred, I'm a simple guy. I go to work, I come home, I have my dinner, I fuck my wife, and I go to bed. So he was a very simple, upstate.
Wait, like, how old is he when he said this to you?
Well, 17. He must have been in his early 30s.
Okay.
So yeah, my dad was a real man's man. He, well, not in a homosexual sense, but hunting and fishing and, you know, raising horses and breeding dogs and really simple guy. So I didn't even know how to tell him in person. So I wrote him a letter. And I was 21. Aww. So I was a little flippant, right? Because I was like, I learned more from being gay than I ever learned from you about being a man. And I was a little, you know, a petulant 21-year-old. But it was a heartfelt letter. And I told him I was happy. And I never heard back, but I heard from my brother that he got the letter. And he said he doesn't have a son anymore because no son of his is going to be a faggot. So that was my relationship with my dad for a while. And it's come around a little bit. But I've never been close to him. Like, I saw him last year at my brother's house. And it was good. He said he's proud of me. He's glad I'm with Jay. So I'm not going to dwell on it. At least I know that, like, we can both die without having regrets. And I don't think we're ever going to be super close. But that's the coming out story.
Yeah. So you talked earlier about upstate New York being a different beast to New York City in that it was a bit more conservative, not necessarily what people would expect when they think of New York. What is it like then, or what was it like, to be in a gay share house with Sean and living that, I hate the word lifestyle, but I'm going to use it, living that lifestyle?
My memories of that time are very, they're still very small town, even though I was living with Sean, especially since I had the contrast of New York City a little bit later. Rumors was very much what they call a small town gay bar. It was our community center in a way, because people would come from Saratoga and further north and Boston Spa. Rumors was our regular kind of hangout. And it was the kind of place where there was a time when in small town gay bars, the lesbians and gay men all coexisted. So there were a lot of lesbians there too. And it's really funny. Like, it would go right down the line of stereotypes. Like, the lesbians would come with their trucks and they would act as the bouncers, and they were really protective of the men. If anybody got in fights, they would be like, what are you doing? Get out of here. You know, so they kind of played that fatherly role in the space.
And the pool table. Don't forget the pool table.
Yeah, yeah, it was hard to get a gay man because the lesbians wanted to play a lot of pool. But again, stereotypically, most of the gay men were voguing on the dance floor. So,
and so when you're in that small town, and this is the only place where you get to play around or like figure yourself out in a free way. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? Or what did that look like for you?
I have a pretty cool answer to this, because even though I dove into the world of this pretty quickly, it took me a while to figure out who I was in this new world. When I first started going to Rumors, Sean was from Texas, and he had a long perm, like almost like a mullet. And he dressed with like pants that were tucked into snakeskin boots and sweaters from Structure and a bolo tie. And he smoked Virginia Slims. So I started smoking and I started to try to dress like Sean, because I thought, well, I'm gay now, so of course, I have to do what Sean does because he's gay.
And I have to start tucking my trousers in,
Tucking them into my boots. Like, but, you know, I thought, okay, I've got to conform to this now. Because when you're that age, you're like looking for your identity. Mm-hmm. And then I stayed in the apartment and Sean moved on. And I had some other roommates that I had a lot of wild adventures with during what I call my goth phase. When I was living with people who were wearing all black and rosary beads and lots of mascara and listening to a lot of Depeche Mode and Dead Can Dance and The Cure. And I dove into that and really hung out with them and did the whole goth thing. And we would go to Rumors and our goth stuff. Like, and so that was a whole phase. And I did a lot of crazy things during that time. Smoked a lot of weed. Tried psychedelics for the first time with these people. I don't regret any of it, but it was just like, I'm trying to find an identity. I'm trying to land. And then there's a whole other couple of chapters trying to find identity once I moved to New York City.
And so, well, where does that end then? Where, like, where does it end? It never ends. You're always trying to look for yourself, right? But how did you land on who you were?
Well, I was in New York for 12 years, trying to fit into gay scenes there, try to navigate the bar scene there and the spaces for gay men, for sexuality and things like that in the city. And this is like probably around 93, I moved to New York. I spent some time trying to go to regular gay bars in New York City, like Splash Bar and just the generic bars. And I found that even though I was a lot thinner than I am now, I was still a little bit chunky, just a little bit. And I had a really hard time finding acceptance in the gay male community. Mm-hmm. I experienced a lot of rejection, a lot of very cruel rejection, especially in, and I'll tell you this because it'll match up with something later. You know, I would go to men's sex spaces, like after hours clubs, mm-hmm. 22 years old, trying to find connection, very green, trying to, you know, connect in erotic ways and other ways. And I would experience in these places a lot of really pointed, like people pushing me away from group scenes, telling me I'm gross, telling me I'm too fat, you know. So that stuck with me. It shaped a lot of who I am today, but it ended up in a good place. Because then I discovered the bear scene. First, I discovered it online through early things like the gay.com, which doesn't exist anymore. It was the early days of the internet.
R.I.P. Yeah.
And I started meeting people through this. And they're like, oh, you got to go to the Dugout on Sundays. And I went to the Dugout, which is a gay bar on Christopher Street. And they had a beer blast outside of every week. I would go and men who looked like me were taking off their shirts and feeling sexy and feeling accepted. So I gravitated toward this, decided that I had a bear identity. And it finally fit. It finally felt like, yeah, this is right. This feels good. It was a celebration of a natural masculinity. Wasn't about being a gym bunny or, you know, the parts of the gay scene that I saw at the time as superficial. So it felt like a way to just be natural. Men of different ages and body types could hang out and be together. And that worked for a while.
So can I ask?
Yeah.
Bear related questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know why I'm being so sheepish about this. So we talked earlier about like that moment of realization around being like, oh, I'm gay, and what that meant and what the thought process around that was. What was the thought process around being like, oh, I'm a bear?
It was literally the first time I went to the Dugout and hung out with guys of all shapes, colors, sizes, ages, and felt the freedom. I just didn't feel judged the way I did in other gay spaces. And I felt like my body was accepted. And I felt like the bear community was embracing masculinity in a way that was very expansive and inclusive of many different types of behavior and look. Mm-hmm. And it felt like another awakening, like another realization, a homecoming. Yeah, it felt like I'm home.
Do you remember the first time saying that to yourself, like, I am a bear?
That day.
Just instantaneous.
That first day. Because I had already been in bear circles online. So I guess it just took that in-person piece to really make it all click.
Did you feel any reluctance in embracing that?
Not at all. Not for a second. It just felt right, you know?
Yeah. Well, and so this thing as well about the cliques that are forming within the bear community. So as someone who's not part of the bear community, as an outsider, it seems as though... I don't know. Explain it to me.
I want to talk about it, but I want to be careful. I'm always careful in how I talk about this because I don't want to further separate people. But what happens is, what happened in the bear circles is you started to get people who were less chubby and more muscular, who were just hairy, mm-hmm. kind of coming to these events more and more. And then I think two things happened. One, those people naturally, because all human groups do this, we started to create hierarchies, like the cool people. And then all the magazines and the advertisements for bear events started to put really muscular guys in their advertisements. And then you go to events and these guys usually hung out with their friends who looked like them. But on the flip side, I think chubbier men or men who've been traumatized earlier, like I was... a lot of rejection. Yeah. We tend to project on people like that too. And to say, oh, well, they're assholes. They're a bunch of douchebags. And I've learned that it's not good to do that either. Because when we take our victimhood and we start to project it onto everything, we're just perpetuating the cycle. And I'm interested in smashing all of it.
Mm. Yeah. And yeah, and it's this hard thing, isn't it, with human beings and any kind of group. Like, you want it to be inclusive, you want everyone to feel welcome and for everything to just work, but yeah, as soon as humans and egos and weirdness gets involved, there's all this, these hierarchies, as you say, that form. Mm-hmm. And it just gets a bit much. But those aren't the only two subgroups in the bear community, are they? I feel like I hear about a new one every week.
You're talking about all the fun labels like cub, otter, wolf, polar bear.
Wait, a polar bear is someone who's older and has white hair, right?
So before I run down all the different labels, I like to say these labels can be fun. They can be ways of talking about things that you like or things that, like, attributes, but don't take them seriously. If you start taking them seriously, you know, because you got, like, what's a cub? Some people say it's a younger guy. Some people say it's a furry older guy who's not as fat. There's all these ways of defining things. And a polar bear is usually an older, white-haired guy. So we have these labels, and I don't think we should get rid of using them. I just don't think we should take them too seriously because they really don't really describe very cut-and-dry identities. Does that make any sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But most of it is an attitude. It's an attitude toward body image. It's an attitude toward inclusivity. It's an attitude toward the expansiveness of masculinity. You will see a look that people associate with bear, like somebody like me. Usually a big beard, large body, they're hairy. But I think that the reason you see that so much is because those are the people who were marginalized in the gay community for so long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the aesthetic, the accepted traditional standard of beauty for gay men is thin, hairless, twinky. So these are the people who felt excluded. So they're well represented in the bear community, but that doesn't mean that it stops there.
Well, I find the whole label thing really fascinating because, yeah, like, especially when you get into these ones that are very niche, like I'm an otter or I'm a Siamese cat, because I kind of get that having a label and associating yourself with something can help people to understand themselves and help people to feel as though they mm-hmm. fit in, like they've found their in crowd. But then at the same time, I feel it can be really quite toxic when people become fixated on that as something that defines them when it really doesn't.
Yeah, exactly what I'm saying is that labels are useful until they're not.
But knowing when they're not is tricky. Yeah.
It is. But you're not going to get rid of them because, like you said, in the beginning of something like that, it's a really useful way for people to understand themselves and to find an affinity group. But these things are, I'm learning as I get older, that these things are a double-edged sword. And you just have to get really skillful at wielding the sword and knowing which way it's cutting.
Ooh, I like that turn of phrase. Okay, so let's go back then. So we talked about your journey through rumors. We talked about you leaving upstate New York to move to New York City. At what time did rumors close?
Rumors closed after I moved to New York City, very shortly after. I don't know the exact date, but I know that it was closed by 1995.
Okay. And did you get to say goodbye?
No, I didn't.
Did it bother you that it closed, or was it just like one of those things?
You know, to be honest, once I was in New York City, I was like, okay, well, we closed.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even realize until later in my life just how formative that experience was. At the time, I was in my mid-20s, and I was like, I'm in New York now. I don't care. You know?
Yeah.
I'm in the big city. Yes, it closed down, and another place run by the same people opened in Glens Falls for a little while. And that was called, it's either Alternatives or Lifestyles. I can't remember which one. Which is another interesting thing about these small town gay bars. They have these really funny names. Things like Rumors, Alternatives, Deceptions, Flirtations.
Mystique.
There was actually a bar in Albany called Deceptions.
And that wasn't for swingers.
No, which is interesting if you think about it, like a queer identity, right? We're calling our bar Deceptions. There was another one called The Rage. You know, it was just Rumors, Whispers. To me now, when I look back at them, they're just so self-hating kind of names and perpetuating stereotypes about gay people.
But, you know. And so looking back then, now with the benefit of all the years between now and the 90s, why was that space so important to you?
Not because it was the best space, but because it was the first space. It was formative for me. It was the first place when I had any inkling of a different kind of life, a more expansive identity, a more authentic identity, beginning to understand that I could love other men. And oh God, Rumors was the first place I did drag.
Well, how has this not come up until now?
It was Halloween. I have to tell the story. It was Halloween, and I decided with me and my friend Wayne, we were going to dress up in drag. And I remember there was a bartender there named Norman, and Norman did a lot of drag. And Norman invited us to his house before going to Rumors to get made up. And I decided, because I was a big fan of John Waters' film Female Trouble, that I was going to play the character played by Divine called Dawn Davenport. And so I had a tube top on, like just this tube top thing, and then my belly hanging out, and these little short shorts, and a leopard skin coat, and the same kind of wig that Dawn wore, and I shaved my eyebrows.
That's commitment.
So I played Divine at this drag show, and I lip synced to, of all things, I Feel Pretty from West Side Story. I looked anything but pretty. I'm never shaving for drag again. I'll be a bearded lady.
It's a commitment. Yeah. But, so in relation to rumors.
Yeah.
What did it teach you about yourself?
That I could be who I want to be. That there were people out there who would embrace me. And there was a community out there for me. That I could find tribe if I looked for it. Yeah, those are the things that rumors taught me. Rumors taught me to think bigger about who I was and to break out of the mold of my small town. And that's why once I go into rumors for a little while, I couldn't wait to go to New York City.
Ah.
I couldn't wait.
So it was like your gateway drug.
Sort of.
Before that, did you have any plans to go to New York or?
No, I met a guy at Deceptions in Albany, went back to his hotel room. Long story, he was at a Young Republican convention. It was a whole thing of being in the closet and whatever. He had to sneak me out of the room. It was a big thing. But I got his information. He lived in New York. And I went to visit him a couple weeks later. And I decided I was moving to New York. And I said to him, I'm moving to New York. I'm going to be your boyfriend. And he didn't believe me. So he kind of just went, yeah, whatever. And then I'd talk to him on the phone. And I'd be like, I'm moving. I'm getting my apartment gone. And I'm quitting my job. And he'd be like, yeah. I did the whole thing, and I came down, and a friend dragged me down, and I get there, and he's like, oh, you actually did it. So I moved in with him. We were together for many years, but never as an official couple, because I'm 22, and I'm thinking, I'm moving to New York to be with my boyfriend. I got there, and he dragged me around to different sex clubs, and, you know, I would be the backup plan.
Aww.
Well, it ended in a good place. We really, over the years, developed a fondness for each other. And then when I was ready to move out and go and be with another boyfriend, then he was like, oh, I'll give you commitment. I'll be with you for real. And I'm like, it's too late, David. But we're still close. Like, not all the time, but like I speak to him and it ended in a good place. I'm glad that I met David. He got me to New York. I still have affection for him all these years later. But that's what got me to New York.
It motivated you.
I mean, he's no longer a Republican. He works for Democratic, like, Stonewall Society.
Oh, okay, good. Like, I felt bad about signing when you said you were still his friend. I was like, oh, shit.
No, he's definitely turned his back on all that now. But I just wanted to tell you about him because that's how I got to New York.
So we're flitting around between going to New York and then being in Saratoga Springs. So let's end by taking us back to upstate New York. I want you to think about that first night when you were tagging along with Sean, heading to Rumors for the very first time, and think about that person that you were at that time. And let's say you get an opportunity to have a conversation with him and give him some advice. What would you say?
Wow, you're good. That's a good one. I'm in the car with him. He's excited. He's afraid. Enjoy it. Don't take it all so seriously. You're way more valuable than you know. You have a lot to offer. Don't be so desperate. Because I was desperate to be loved, you know?
Yeah. That line, you're way more valuable than you know. I think that's so important. Such an important thing to hear.
Yep. I understand my worth finally at 53. Why can't we realize these things when we're in our 20s?
Well, if you did, you'd be an asshole, really.
Probably, because you don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, you're right? Like, I'm so great. I'm amazing. But you don't want to be that person.
Right.
You know, you need to, like, have a bit of fumbling and a bit of difficulty in order to be someone who's interesting, right? Right? That's what I tell myself anyway.
Yeah.
Do you have any memories of Rumors? Or maybe another small-town gay bar in your own scene that you want to share? Well, if you do, don't be shy, get in touch. I want to create the biggest online record of people's memories and stories of queer clubbing, but I need your help. Go to lostspacespodcast.com, find the section Share a Lost Space, and then tell me what it is you got up to. You could also reach out to me on Facebook or Instagram, where my handle is Lost Spaces Pod. And whilst you're there, why not give Freddie a little follow? Freddie, a follow. Freddie, I like alliteration. His Instagram is Golden Heart Bear. If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you took the time to subscribe, leave a review on your podcast platform, or just tell other people who you think might be interested in giving it a little listen to, like maybe add something to your Instagram stories, or maybe just email someone in particular. My name's Kay Anderson, and you have been listening to Lost Spaces.